In this session, titled Growing Through Grief, Emotional Adjustment to Vision Loss, Ellen Morrow from Vision Loss Resources reviews the feelings and reactions to grieving the loss of vision. She describes different types of loss and different methods of coping, including inner strength and outer resources. She also discusses research on significant factors in resiliency. This is the presentation recorded at the Visions 2012 conference in Minneapolis, sponsored by the Foundation Fighting Blindness. We are grateful to the Foundation for making these recordings available to the public, and we know you will enjoy and benefit from what Ellen Morrow has to say.
Thank you so much for being here. It's certainly a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. What I'd like to do this afternoon is talk generally about loss and then specifically about the grieving process a little bit, but really kind of what to expect. Understanding right off the bat that it's not ever the same for any two people, that we go in and out and up and down. I think roller coaster is an apt term for adjusting to any major change or loss in our lives, vision loss certainly being no exception to that. And one of my early mentors in this field is a man named Dr. Ken Moses. Ken Moses was the one who introduced to me the concept of event loss and non-event loss. The event loss is the diagnosis, the name. It's the first time the doctor says to you, you have this, and often the word was, and there's nothing we can do about it. And so that event loss is what most of us think of as the loss, and what most of your support people, your colleagues, your family, your friends, your community will be able to identify with and may even say to you, gee, I'm sorry to hear about your RP or your macular degeneration or whatever. It's something that people can sort of resonate with. They don't understand it, but at least they have the language to say that to you. What we know, and what Dr. Moses was one of the first ones to teach me, is behind every event loss, there is a list or a series of what he calls non-event losses. And that the greatest of those losses for most people is the loss of what you thought the rest of your life would be like. I can almost guarantee you, no one probably in your circle of family or friends will say, gee, I'm sorry you lost what you thought the rest of your life would be like. People don't get that, but you get it. Because when that diagnosis comes to you, or as it begins to manifest itself, life changes. For some people, it changes really fast if the vision loss is sudden and significant and sometimes total. For a lot of other people with vision loss, it's a slow, bit by bit, always adjusting to something process. And we're going to talk about that more in a minute, but that's hard. So we get comfortable, so this is what life is going to be like. I can manage this, I've got these tools and this equipment and this training, and then boom, we lose some more. And that's so often why adjusting to this kind of loss is so hard. So I ask people to think about the loss of what you thought the rest of your life would be like, and what that really calls us to do then is to say, and what's it going to be like now? And how do I find meaning and purpose and fulfillment in the context of this loss, knowing that more changes are ahead? Another non-event loss is the loss of what you can no longer do. Anybody got any thoughts about that? What can you no longer do? Drive, 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 drive. Yeah, that's the worst, isn't it? Reading, you can read differently, but not the same. So all those things, I've had so many people say to me through the years, you know, Ellen, it's not that I can't do it. It's that it takes so long, whether it's cooking or work stuff or getting somewhere when you can no longer drive. I can still do it, but it's just a hassle. And so there again, very often people will not understand that for you, it's not so much the vision, it's how that manifests itself. that what you can no longer do, what you have to do very differently, all the accommodations that you have to make in, day out. For me now, it's no longer one pair of glasses, it's about three. It depends on what I'm doing, how tired I am, how good the lighting is. So that's another non-event loss. Another one can be the change in the way people treat you. The people that just sort of go away, the people who don't know what to say. I've had clients say to me for 30 years, my God, you'd think it was contagious. Where did they go? What happened to them? And just a few weeks ago, a lady said to me, you know, I was always the one who picked people up, took them out to lunch, took them to church. Where are they now? What happened here? I was the one, and now I don't get that kind of help. Those are hurtful in their heart, aren't they? Another way that manifests itself, especially with some of the older clients we work with, is that their kids start to treat them like children. So it cuts both ways, though. Through the years, people have said to me, boy, you really find out who your friends are. And sometimes it's surprising who's really there for you, who you thought would not be. The fourth, and there's an endless list, but these are the ones we're going to hit high today. The fourth then is the vocational change and financial change. And for many people, when they go through a major change or loss in their life, and certainly in their vision, it means changes at work or finding a new vocation. And what do you do in the meantime? I had a client years ago, I will never forget this fellow. He said to me, you know, Ellen, in this country, a disabled person is a poor person. Now, I'm happy to say he retrained, went on, and wasn't a poor person anymore. But that time in the middle, it's scary, it's hard, it's difficult. And again, people might get vision loss, but they may not understand that your whole career, your whole life goals, maybe your whole avocation, what you love to do, is drastically changed or gone. Event loss, non-event loss. Now, there are a few other losses that I want to highlight because they're important. You can do more research or more study on them yourselves. One of them is anticipatory loss. That's the one I said earlier I'd come back to. For most eye diseases, statistically, we don't lose X amount of vision and we're done, do we? Nope. It's a little bit at a time or chunks at a time, depending on how your vision loss manifests. Anytime we have a loss that isn't final or complete, it's harder because we're always dealing with the loss. So that's a bummer, right to start with. And there's no magic bullet here. There's no pill you can take for anticipatory loss. But I almost guarantee you, you will have it if that's the kind of vision loss you have. For those of you who are here as support people, understand that that loss is ongoing not only for your loved one, but for you too. And those changes affect often, certainly, the primary relationship, but also the more extended family and friends and community. So it's loss for everybody, but for the person dealing with the vision loss, the anticipatory loss is huge. Another is vicarious loss, and we talk about that quite a bit at Vision Loss Resources because one of the things we know helps, at least it helps me, is to be with other people who are sort of in the same boat or a similar situation. What also happens, though, is that when you're with other people who share that loss or share other situations that are difficult, we feel for them. But every once in a while, there's someone who says, I just can't deal with what's going on with somebody else. It's so hard. So just be aware of it. Open up your mind to the idea that if you're going to be with other people with vision loss, or other people in general for that matter, we will feel for them and with them too. And then a big one is ambiguous loss. Easiest loss to deal with is one that you can name and claim and know what it means for you. Oftentimes, vision loss does not give us that advantage or that benefit. Half the time, we don't know what it's going to mean. We don't know where it's going to land. We don't know what it's going to look like. 2 months or 2 years or 20 years from now. So learn more about ambiguous loss. The easiest loss, again, to deal with is the one that's final and complete. And very rarely does vision loss afford us that. So again, just to be aware that this isn't a piece of cake you're going through here. What we often say at vision loss is it's doable. It's not easy, but it's doable. And then try to help with the tools and resources to help with that. Chronic sorrow is one that was a new concept to me and one I'm very interested in because it has to do with people who have had what we call layered loss. Loss on top of loss on top of loss. We see this a lot with the elders we work with. People who have had to move from the home they love, they've lost not one loved one, but several, perhaps because of their age. They have health issues and vision loss. And layered loss, one on top of the other, pretty soon you don't know what you're feeling about what, and that can lead to a state of chronic sorrow where it's just hard to see beyond that place. And that takes a lot of nurturing, both from nurturing oneself through that and nurturing people that you may know who are in that situation. I want to briefly now move into the they used to call them stages of grief and loss. I don't think we use that terminology anymore. What we know is they can show up anytime now, but just speak to them a little bit specifically to vision loss. And I know this is probably familiar material to a lot of you, so we won't spend a lot of time on it. But often toward the beginning of a loss, there's this period of denial, disbelief. How many of you remember going to the doctor and hearing the diagnosis, hearing the language that there's really nothing right now we can do about that, but there's research? And there is, that's great, but there's not too much we can do about it right now. And just thinking, you've got to be kidding me. People have described it so many different ways. One lady said every day when she hears the mail going to the mailbox, she gets a little as she thinks, I'm not going to be able to read that, you know. Or the people who've described to me grabbing the car keys, going out to the garage and thinking, what am I doing here? I can't do this anymore. So denial, disbelief, we discount. And we discount the impact of a loss because we're not ready to take it all in at once. Denial is a healthy thing. It buys the time we need to gradually take in the impact of that loss. And it will revisit you. It will revisit at those times when there's another decrease in vision. It'll revisit you sometimes just for the heck of it. But it is normal, natural, and like all the feelings of grief, it helps us get through it. It's self-healing, if you will. They talk about guilt. They talk about bargaining. I've heard a lot of bargaining stories. Heard those or been in that place where you just say, if I could just keep the amount of vision I've got now, I will fill in the blank. You know, whatever you promise to whatever you believe in that you're going to do if you could just stay where you're at right now. And the guilt piece is, what could I have done differently here? What caused this? I mean, that's a normal way, again, of coming to terms. I've had people say to me, you know, I used to read under the covers with a flashlight. I wonder if they hurt my eyes that way. If I'd gotten to the doctor sooner, if I'd gotten to the expert, if I'd had that surgery, if. And again, it's a way of coming to terms by thinking about it, by agonizing about it, if you will, coming to terms with it slowly, surely, over time. And then we get to the big two, and the big two are anger and depression, often described as two sides of the same coin, the anger being the outward expression, the depression being the pulling it in. Ken Moses calls anger and depression the meat and potatoes of the grieving process. And his very sophisticated prescription is, and I quote, you just have to muddle through. The experts do say, though, that most of us have a preference, and you know your preference if you think about it. In the face of change, loss, stress, difficulty, are you a person who gets mad and gets it out and kind of look out everybody, or are you a person who goes within to the sadness, stay out of the way, need time to figure this out? Most of us have a preference, and if you think about it, you can identify it. So what the experts say is it's not so important to get over anger and depression as it is to move yourself back and forth between the two. And if you tend to be the angry, get it out person, try to get in touch more with the sadness that you feel. And if you tend to be the depressed, take it in, try to get mad. So how do we do that? I think it helps to yell, scream. Dear old, now departed colleague of mine always said, a grief expressed is a grief diminished. That is never more important than with anger and depression. We need to express it. We need to express it with people who can say, no wonder you feel that way. That makes sense. I hear you. What do we usually get? Oh, come on, cheer up. Could be worse. You think you got problems. You should hear, you know, those things that you just want to pop up, don't you? So what we need is people who can be there, hear us. You never know where you're going to find that. Support groups are good for that for some people. Family members, friends, support people here. Take that to the bank. Take that home with you. I hear ya. That makes sense. No wonder you feel that way. Nobody gets it, but people say, oh, I know just how you feel. I don't think so. I don't think you do. So that anger and depression, that will visit and revisit and revisit us. And it is what saves us in the end. It is what gets us through. But it's not easy. And nobody likes to be around it. And it's hard to admit. But it is what gets us through in the end. A lot of grief and loss material talk of the final stage of acceptance. Do you buy it? Some people do. I'm telling you, it really works for some people. I've had people say to me, you know, Ellen, I've accepted this. Sometimes people honestly even say, I'm grateful for this. I've met people I wouldn't have met. I've had experiences I wouldn't have had. That is awesome. And it's not for everybody. Adjustment. That's another word. We hear that a lot about you adjust to your loss, and by golly, we do one way or another. But on the other hand, I think about adjustment, we're always adjusting to something, aren't we? I mean, there's always something. So adjustment certainly, at the very least, is ongoing. The term I learned many years ago from a totally blind psychologist, she lost her vision from diabetes, her name was Judith Ayler. She said, what we really look for is identity integration. Fancy term, what it means is over time, the loss becomes a part of who you are. It's the point at which we say, I have a vision loss. I'm a visually impaired person. I don't see as well as I used to. My mother calls hers her crabby eyes. You name it, you call it what you want to, but it's when the loss becomes a part of who we are. And that doesn't happen overnight, and that will come and go. That's what we look for. That's what we look for with any major change or loss in life. We might not like it, we might still experience it painfully, and yet to know that over time it becomes a part of us. Major change or loss also affects us physically, mentally, socially, emotionally, spiritually. That about covers the waterfront, doesn't it? And again, so often in our expectation that we're going to adjust and accept and get over it, really, we don't remember that it can affect every single part of our being. Any major change or loss can. If anybody tells you different, don't believe them. It can affect you that way. So physically, most of us have physical manifestations we know. When I'm under stress, does your head ache? Does your gut ache? Do you have, you know, bathroom problems? I mean, we usually have something. We can't assume that something comes from stress or from major change or loss. But if you don't feel very good, don't be too surprised. As my dear departed colleague who I mentioned earlier often said, people tell you they're sick and tired, believe them. They're sick and tired. Yeah, because loss does that to us. mentally, we don't think as well. And the way that manifests itself is our mind, especially when a loss is new or when we're going through another decrease in vision and a whole new set of issues, our mind is attending to that loss. So what happens? We forget where we're going. We forget what we're doing. We forget the name of the neighbor who's lived next door for 20 years as we're trying to introduce them to somebody. You relate? Yeah. That's the mind. That's the mind. That's the mental aspect of dealing with loss. How many of you are hard on yourself when you go through that stuff? Of course we are. And yet, that would have been a good time to say, it's okay, kiddo, you're going through a hard time here. And I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to be gentle with yourself, to nurture yourself, because being hard on yourself usually makes it worse. Physical, mental, social. How many of you in the midst of adjusting to major change and loss don't really feel like going to that wedding or that reception or that buffet, God forbid? Aren't they the worst? It's just like a nightmare. And again, the stories I've heard that clients have shared with me, I was standing at a wedding talking to somebody and pretty soon somebody came up and said, did you know that person you're talking to left 5 minutes ago? Geez, you know, so it's hard, it's awkward, it's difficult. And so what's the danger? The danger is we may begin to isolate. I think if there's a big danger with vision loss, it's isolation. And again, I'm going to say especially with elders, it's pretty easy. And vision loss can look like confusion because we don't have those visual cues that says, oh, I'm out of sugar, and oh, that tablecloth needs to be changed, and oh, I've got a stain on my shirt. So it can look different than what it really is, can it? So socially, and what we talk about often in counseling with clients and people I've worked with is to say, sometimes you got to give in to that and say, I just can't deal with that right now. And sometimes you got to push the envelope and say, I don't feel like going. I need to go. It's important. I'm out the door. I'm on my way. Emotionally, all those feelings we talked about, the roller coaster of anger and depression and guilt and fear and coming to terms. And you know, I can almost guarantee you, it's happened to me. You'll have days where you just think, I've got it. I'm on top of it. This is going to be okay. And don't be surprised if you wake up the next day and you're just not quite in that place. You'll get there again, but it is in and out and up and down and around for most people. Physical, mental, social, emotional, and finally spiritual. I'm not going to talk about religion. I'm just going to tell you, it's not unusual for people to be at odds with their belief system as they go through major change and loss. What did I do to deserve this? People say to me, or why is this happening to me? On the flip side, people will say, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. Yeah, if that works for you, I think that's great, but it doesn't work for everybody. So know your own belief system. Know how this may be affecting it. It's okay. It's normal. It's natural. People often come through loss saying their beliefs are strengthened, and not always. Different for everybody. But just to know that it can affect every part of our lives, our whole being. That process of loss, although we've just done kind of an overview and names and stages and different things, are so individual. It's so different for everybody, and it's so different at different times in our lives. We may respond very differently at one point than another. So what does help? What works? What do I do when I'm in the midst of this and just can't see the way, can't figure it out? Again, no magic bullets, but at Vision Loss Resources for many, many years, we have called this inner strength and outer resources. That combination is pretty hard to beat for most of us for dealing with major change and loss. Inner strength is what you bring to the table, who you are as a person, Who am I? What's important to me? My self-concept, my self-esteem, everything that I am comes with me into this major change or loss. It feels like it goes out the window, but it doesn't. It's still there and it's still intact. So part of what we need to do is ourselves, or with help, get back in touch with that, with who we are, core values, what's really important, and to understand that that part of you has not changed. I often ask people in counseling to bring in a list of what they've gone through so far in their lives. Typical response to that, you don't want to hear that. And I say, yeah, I do. But more importantly, I want you to hear that. Because so many of us are not only survivors, but thrivers. Just think about it for yourself for a minute. What have I gone through so far? Am I a survivor or what? Yeah. And this is one more thing. It's a big thing, but it's one more thing. So starting to see yourself as someone who's about the business of taking charge and remembering who you are and what everything you bring to the table. That strength in knowing that, inner strength. The outer resources are everything you are doing and learning about. It's the medical stuff. It's the research. It's all the technology, which in my 35 years, as you might guess, has just grown incrementally. It is the training and the teaching and the support groups and the volunteers and the all of that, the outer resources for vision loss are better today than they've ever, ever been. It's an exciting time. And yet, the process of putting together inner strength and outer resources when you're in the midst of this major change in loss is no piece of cake. It's not easy. And so I encourage you and implore you, really, as a person with vision loss, be aware of the loss. Be aware of the magnitude of the loss and what it means for you. Take some time with that and get some help with it. And then beginning to identify those inner strengths and those outer resources that are yours to claim and use and in some cases invent. Some of the best darn stuff that has happened at Vision Loss Resources has come because someone has said to us, you know, Ellen, we need a community center, for example, all the activities and stuff we do, classes for fun. Many of those things were initiated by people saying, you know what? We need this. We need that. For those of you who are professionals here, pay attention. For those of you who are support people, pay attention. What do we need here? What do we need to do next? Where are the resources that will help us? And if they aren't there, how can we help implement those? Inner strength, outer resources, and this whole notion of resilience, kind of a new area of study in the last 10 years or so, to tap into your resilience. It's kind of interesting. The research on resilience shows that in a way, we're sort of born being more resilient or not. And then, of course, it's the nature-nurture thing, and then that's nurtured in us or not. But here's the good news. You can learn. You can learn resilience. And I encourage you to do what you can to learn that as well. Thank you very much for being here today. It was a pleasure.